This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, March 9th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Some news and notes before we get to Jessica Mendoza and Sarah Langs and Anthony Gwynn with a Padres preview. Chicago, the city of Chicago, is going to allow 20% fan capacity at MLB fields in time for opening day. Of course, that's the number now. It'll be interesting to see as we go along whether or not that number might change. At Wrigley Field, the oldest ballpark in the National League, attendance will be limited to 8,274 fans per game. The Cubs reported no positive COVID-19 tests among their players during the 2020 season. Corey Seager had a nice moment on Monday for the Dodgers.
Seager geared up, and he swings and he hammers this one to center field deep. This ball back and this ball gone. A three-run shot, Corey Seager.
Your Honor, I rest my case.
That was Rick Monday, Tim Neverett on the Dodgers broadcast. Ian Happ joined the Cubs booth during his at-bat, and he hit a leadoff single while on a hot mic. Give a listen.
Yep, there you go.
Hold it. There you go.
I mean, why wait around for anything else, Ian? Just get that fastball and get yourself a knock.
If he's going to throw me a first pitch heater, what else are we going to do?
Yeah, cool moment. We had some of those on our broadcast last week, so you love it when the players are mic'd up. Now, before we get to Jess, Sarah, and Tony, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And check out Around the Rim Presents I'm Speaking, hosted by LaChyna Robinson, an interview series focusing on Black women across sports, entertainment, and culture who are refusing to be silent and demanding real change. Episode 1 features a conversation between Robinson, Netflix Chief Marketing Officer Bozema St. John, and WNBA player and activist Natasha Cloud. That's Around the Rim Presents I'm Speaking. Listen wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst for ESPN. You hear her on a lot of baseball games. Last week, Jess, it was fun to listen to you with a couple exhibition games.
Oh my gosh. I know it's not the same because we're not totally, you know, on site spring training. So there is a weird feel when they're referencing how hot it is and the weather and, you know, you're so used to being there and being around. But yeah, to be able to dive into teams right now, like just kind of normalcy a little bit, felt really, really good.
All right. This was a tweet sent out on Monday on International Women's Day by Kim Ng, the general manager of the Marlins. Give a listen.
Hi, my name is Kim Ng. Happy International Women's Day. If I can do it, you can do it too.
And Jess, she put together a 41-song playlist that was, as it was written up on MLB.com, it felt like a tour of women's empowerment through the decades. You had Lady Gaga, you had Aretha Franklin. What would be on your playlist?
Oh, on the spot. I mean, I'd start it with Billie Holiday, like bring it back, you know, give me some Janis Joplin, Steve Nicks. Steve Nicks would be all over that thing. You know, then, you know, getting into even Alicia Keys and Gwen Stefani, I've always just admired, like, just pump me up. I'm just a girl, like those songs. but yeah, that would be so much fun now that I'm thinking of it. Like, I love music. I'm obsessed with, honestly, generational music. That's why, you know, Billie Holiday, like, I love listening to her voice and her soul for the time that she was singing in, the representation of what that was. And then I've always been obsessed with the 60s. So I probably have a list of like 30 women just alone through those, that decade into the 70s. And then, you know, even getting into now and just, I love that she did that. And now I think I'm going to make one. you've told me about Kim's.
Now, I covered Kim when I was covering the Yankees for the New York Times from 1998 to 2001. She was the assistant general manager of the team then. And it's been interesting. I was curious when she got that job, sort of how she would, you know, because right away there were just this rash of stories about, you know, her being the first in this job. And you can relate to this, Jess, where, you know, you have a choice. You can either say, look, I just want to focus on my work and I'm not going to talk about this. Or you can decide, you know what, I am going to talk about it because that's important. And I would have guessed that Kim would have gone the other way and said, I just want to focus on my job, because she generally speaking is an understated person. But that's not how it's been. She absolutely has embraced this.
She's smart, honestly. And when I say smart, meaning she understands the bigger picture, that ultimately a lot of this stuff isn't about us. It's not about like the individual. It's not about Kim Ng. Because if it was about Kim Ng, I completely agree with you, Buster. She'd be like, no, I'm good. Like, I'm just going to do my job. And we don't really need to talk about the fact that I'm a woman. She is incredibly smart, and that she understood from the very beginning that this is about all the girls, all of the influence, all of the men that are going to see her, are going to hear her, are going to be influenced by her. And if she were to just back away out of that like place, which, to be honest, it's not a great place to be in a lot of times, because you want to talk about your job, you want to talk about the things that, you know, the nuances, all the things that you're going to bring to the table, and not always talk about your gender. And I appreciate the Kim Ng's of the world that are really great at their job and underneath it all want to just focus on their job, but they understand the bigger picture of wanting to make sure that people hear their voice and do all the interviews that you know she doesn't want to do. But it's important for every girl, right? And their dads and their brothers and everyone to see the Kim Ng's of the world so that they can know they can do it too.
All right. We got word on Monday, Francisco Lindor talks are probably going to begin this week with the Mets. And when I look at this situation, I feel like even though the players have lost so much ground with free agency, when you look at the, you know, the numbers with the contracts that have been doled out, that in this moment, I feel like the leverage is in Lindor's favor, because I think there's going to be a ton of pressure on Steve Cohen, the Mets' new owner, to get a deal done because they haven't won anything yet. What do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely in Lindor's favor, especially when you're seeing, you know, Tatis, that deal just kind of set a standard, I think, of expectation that won't be, you know, met with a Francisco Lindor as far as the length, you know, 14 years. But you think about the amount of free agent shortstops that are available this winter, you know, Lindor and what Steve Cohen definitely wants to do within the Mets, you know, organization of they have so many pitchers that have been the faces of that franchise, but have lacked that position player, that face. You know, Mike Conforto has been there in and out with that, but Francisco Lindor just brings something
that really what Steve Cohen and everyone's looking to Steve Cohen to do is have that big deal where it's like, he is going to be someone that as a Met fan, you can just tie into, buy the jersey and know for the next decade or the rest of his career, he will be with the Mets.
You ready to be put on the spot?
Uh-oh, bring it.
So the conversation among agents during the course of the winter is very interesting because they look at the Dodgers and where they are with payroll. Let's face it, the Dodgers decide that they want to buy every player. They could do that, but Andrew Friedman has not done that. We know that they've committed a lot of money to Mookie Betts moving forward. At some point, they're going to have to pay Walker Buehler. And Corey Seager's a free agent in the fall. The agents are looking at the Dodgers payroll, and they believe the Dodgers are kind of barreling toward that moment when they're going to have to choose between investing a long-term deal in Corey Seager or Cody Bellinger. Which guy would you take if you're the Dodgers?
Oh, you're going to make me do this. I mean, it's definitely Cody, and I shouldn't say definitely, because Corey Seager brings so much, as you know, as we saw last year. I mean, a career year that he had. He is someone that I just feel like, because of the body, and not that Cody Bellinger is immune to injuries. I mean, shoot, he can't even give a forearm like high five without dislocating his shoulder and now having shoulder surgery. But I'm always drawn to the dynamic, you know, the ones, I'm an outfielder, so the ones that climb the wall, make the defensive plays, you feel like, just gosh, watching his swing, the capability that he really has to change the game. And there's something stubborn about Corey Seager, you know, always swinging at the first pitch. And now we've had so many conversations with Dave Roberts about, yeah, we try to talk to him like pitchers know. And, you know, these are two great players. So it's not that Corey Seager isn't good enough, but if you're having to make that decision, and I'm a GM, I'm going with Cody Bellinger, and not because one is so much greater. I'm way biased towards the swing, the ability to do what he can do on any given day, knowing, let's be real, all the talent that's around him. It doesn't have to be about Cody or Corey, because you have so many other guys in that lineup. I'd rather the guy that can just do the Cody things that he does.
Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Washington Nationals, talked to reporters on Monday and said that the team will make offers to Juan Soto and to Trey Turner. Turner turns 28 in June. He'd be a free agent after the 22 season. I would expect that they'd be able to work something out. Juan Soto's situation's interesting, Jess, because I think he's going to be, you know, the once in a 20-year type of offensive player. He's that good with the plate discipline that he has. And if I were sitting in Juan Soto's camp and he's represented by Scott Boras, I'd want to see the next CBA, the terms of that, and to see teams back to being aggressive and fully recovered from the pandemic before I get into negotiation for Juan Soto. He's going to make plenty of money either way, but he has a potential, in my opinion, to perhaps threaten Mike Trout for the biggest contract ever. What do you think?
Well, he has time. I mean, that's the thing, is he has the ability to sit back and, you know, not have to make a decision right now, because he is under the Nationals' control for, you know, a few more years. It's not like Trey Turner where it's coming up next year. And so he has the ability to, the ball's in his court and he can listen. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what offers, especially knowing that Tatis deal is going to be the standard. I feel like that was probably one of the biggest reactions once that deal came down, was, okay, Juan Soto. I mean, just turning your eyes to another really young, dynamic player with so much skill, so much talent, that will only continue to get better. And just a good, like someone that really wants to work hard, is, unless it's something, it'd be hard to turn down a deal similar to that. But unless it's something that ridiculous, I don't see why because all they have is time right now to continue to wait. I'm sure Juan Soto would love to lock up, you know, the next 14 years of his career, but knowing that it's a difference of a year, especially to your point with the CBA deal and really where the sport is going, forget even the CBA. I mean, 2021 to 2022, I think we're going to see such a dynamic shift in what the aftermath of the losses of all of these teams were in 2020. And their decisions, and who decides that, okay, like the Dodgers, they're just still pedal to the metal. We're going to spend money. But I think a lot of teams and organizations aren't going to be in the bidding like they were in the past.
This was from the Angels game on Monday. How about Jose Iglesias with a crazy play?
Sack fly. It's about it. Fisher hits it to short left field.
Little trouble and, oh my goodness, Jose Iglesias.
Is that unreal?
Just the that is unbelievable.
That is magic.
So, Jess, yeah, crazy play. The ball's hit over his head. He's got his back to the infield. He realized the left fielder's not going to get it. So it's like he just swipes his glove like he's trying to, you know, swat a fly away. He catches the ball, then he flips it with his glove behind his back to the left fielder, who doubles the runner off at second base, which is why you heard that reaction from the announcers. You know, it's not a surprise that the Angels went out and got a really good defensive player in Jose Iglesias, but it's interesting. I think that when you look at who the Angels added this winter, Iglesias, Dexter Fowler, it's pretty clear from folks I talked to, they're looking for guys who play with an edge. Who, you know, and we've seen Iglesias in a couple times. He's had confrontations with teammates in the dugout, you know, calling them, trying to raise his standard. And I think because in part there's been this perception of the Angels is that they don't really have that. That Iglesias is a really nice ad for them.
Yeah, they have a lot of really nice guys. I mean, the face of their team is Mike Trout. You know, he's the best player in baseball. He's also just very, you know, just the guy that you know what to expect. He's not going to make anyone mad. He's not going to say anything controversial. Like, I always felt like the best teams, and I would say that as a female sport, we always needed that player that was like you wanted to punch in the face if they weren't on your team. But when they're on your team, Buster, you fight for them and you need that like grit. It's like you rally behind them. I'm not saying sometimes they always make the best decisions, but the teams that win, they always have that guy. They always have that woman. They have that player that ultimately is fearless. And that's why defensively, even you see it shine because there is no inhibition. I mean, there's such a pure talent. Obviously, there's only like 1% of all of human race that can make a play like that. Probably even less than that. But it's something about the way that he plays the game. You nailed it. I mean, Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, even Anthony Rendon, right? These are the biggest names on that team. And they're more quiet. They're definitely not someone that's going to bat flip and get in your face and just really get you going to rally behind and win a game.
You know, one thing I would say to Mike Trout, like if I were working the front office, because he is such a reflexively nice person, but to hear the stories from his family members, like his mom, his dad, about the board games they had growing up, I would tell Mike, hey, Mike, you know how you used to like get into these absolute, bloodbath games where no one would speak to each other for a couple of hours of the board games? That's what we want you to be for us. Like, we want you to call out teammates because you have that type of credibility. And I guarantee you, Jess, that's within Mike Trout. Like, that's in there.
Well, he's incredibly competitive. I mean, you can see it just from his own accountability with himself. Like, he's competitive right with himself. I think it's taking that where, okay, the team is you, Mike Trout. Like, this is an extension of you. Every player is an appendage. Every player is a part of you. If you were to approach it like that, How would you feel if someone didn't run out a fly ball? How would you feel if someone was not paying attention and a ball went in between their legs? Like if that was you, you'd be all over them. If it was your dad, if it was your mom, you know, you wouldn't even, there would be zero chance that it would ever be allowed. But when it's your own team, it seems like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to keep quiet, even though I might be fuming. Instead of taking it on, is like, no, this is an extension of me. Because ultimately that's what this team is. It's his team.
30 seconds. Tell me, we got Anthony Gwynn coming up. I'm going to ask him for a projection on this Padres in 2021 in terms of wins for the season. What number would you put on them over 162 games?
I'm going with 91.
Wow. Okay. That's very interesting. Lower than I would expect. I would have expected, but wow, that would mean the Dodgers are going to win the division in a runaway if that's the case, probably.
Well, they're projected to win, 104 games, I think was the last thing I saw, which is insane. And yeah, no, it's not that I'm not thinking like great on the Padres. It's just that I feel like this entire National League is going to beat each other up, I think, a lot more than people think. And not so much the Central, but between the East, you know, teams in the West, I just, you know, I'm interested to see how it all plays out, especially who ends up getting into the postseason.
All right, Jess, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Buster.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Daryl Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, before we get started with the numbers game this week, I want to ask you, you know, you're a Mets fan. Everybody knows that about Jacob DeGrom's velocity, because that seems to be getting a lot of attention this spring, that it feels like every year he just keeps throwing harder and harder and harder. I kind of look at it as he's such a phenomenal athlete that, you know, even now that he's in his 30s, he's still learning how to use his body. What do you got on his velocity?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been so exciting to see the velocity increase, which is not something we expected from someone at his age necessarily. You know, it's a little bit different when a guy comes up at maybe 20, and by 21, 22, we're seeing more velo. But what DeGrom is doing is basically unprecedented. And, you know, he was hitting in that 99, 100 range in his spring debut the other day. And he threw more pitches at 99 miles an hour than anyone else in the majors last year. And that's including relievers and guys who we really expect to come out and only throw 99 and maybe in a shorter outing. But DeGrom is basically putting out reliever type velocity in starts and being elite and not getting, you know, beat up by throwing that hard or getting hurt or anything else. So, I mean, it's been incredible to watch.
Let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
So number three is three. Speaking of DeGrom, it was announced the other day he's going to make the opening day start for the Mets. Of course, no surprise, but now it's official, so we can talk about it a little bit more. So it'll be his third straight opening day start for the Mets. Only two Mets pitchers have had a longer streak, and it's Tom Seaver and Doc Gooden. And I could have given you two guesses, and I guarantee you would have gotten those two. So Doc Gooden made four straight in 1988 to 1991. And Seaver made 10 straight from 68 to 77, which is, I believe, tied for the third longest streak by a pitcher with one single team of opening day starts. And just looking at, you know, where DeGrom could end up in the pantheon of Mets pitchers, obviously he debuted at an older age than a lot of guys do these days. So maybe that puts him in a different spot. But with the production we've seen from him lately and the fact that he's shown no sign of slowing down, it feels like he can continue to climb these leaderboards. So he's currently 10th in Mets history in starts with 183. Seaver leads that list with 395. And he's fifth with 1,359 strikeouts. And Seaver, of course, leads that list as well with 2,541.
And by the way, Sarah, on April 1st, we've got that first start for DeGrom. Our Sunday night group does. Jacob DeGrom, I'm assuming, against Max Scherzer, Francisco Lindor's first game for the Mets. Pretty fired up about that.
Not to mention Juan Soto. I mean, what is there not to watch in that game? Very exciting.
Number two.
Number two is 036. So that was the batting average against Shohei Ohtani's splitter in 2018. And I'm really excited about what we saw from him on Friday when he made his pitching debut for spring training this year. He got five strikeouts, including, you know, his 100-mile-an-hour pitches that he was throwing a lot in 2018. That splitter that I just mentioned was definitely out and getting some batters there. And if Shohei Ohtani can really be the pitcher that he was in 2018 again, I will not have to keep talking about those 2018 stats, which would be very exciting. That 0.36 batting average on his splitter was the lowest opponent average for any pitcher on any single pitch type back in 2018, with at least 40 plate appearances ending on that pitch type. And I wrote about him over the weekend and kind of trying to figure out exactly how much of an impact he could have on the Angels team if he's really healthy on both sides of the ball. So he's currently projected, per Zips projections from Dan Zimborski, for 1.6 wins above replacement as a hitter and 1.1 as a pitcher. So that's good. But, you know, that 2.7, it feels like a good and great Ohtani can have even more of an impact. So I actually reached out to Dan and he ran a 90th percentile projection for me for Ohtani as a hitter, basically the best case scenario or very close to it. And with that, that Ohtani has a 534 slugging percentage, 25 home runs, and 2.9 wins above replacement. And there are no percentiles for pitching projections, but if we figure that he had 1.1 WAR in 2018 when he made 10 starts and he was really good. So if he makes more starts than that, I think we're looking at a combined projection here in the fives, which could definitely be that all-star caliber and really something we haven't seen in a long time with that much impact coming from both sides of the ball.
Number one.
So So number one is 322. That's what Tim Anderson hit last year. And I just had to make a pick the other day for a player to lead the majors in batting average for 2021. And I was picking fifth in the American League. DJ LeMahieu would be the first pick in the AL for sure. But I took him with the fifth pick in the AL, and I think he's a really good guy to have on your radar for something like this for 2021. We know what he's done, and I think that everyone saw him hit 335 in 2019, and they talked about a high BABIP and maybe come back down to earth and whatever else. But he ended up being really good again in 2020, not quite on that same level, but very close to it. And if you look at stuff like his expected batting average, which is telling you about the contact that he's making, he's been 90th percentile or better in that in each of the last 2 years, which tells us there haven't just been a lot of lucky bloop hits or whatever else it's been, but that he's really been making good contact and hitting well. And something that was fun for me is that, so he became the second White Sox player to lead the majors in batting average in 2019 when he did it, joining Luke Appling, who did it in 1936. And I love when something happens for the first time since 1936. But Appling only did that once. He won two batting titles, but only once did he actually lead the majors. So Tim Anderson could very likely, whether it's this year or in the next few years, do something that we've never seen a White Sox player do twice.
And Joe McEwing, one of the coaches that talked to me last year about how, in his mind, Tim Anderson's just getting better and better and better because he's applying his accumulated knowledge, you know, in the way that we saw Mike Trout do it for sure. Anthony Gwynn is coming up with a Padres preview. I'm going to ask him how many wins he's got the Padres for. What do you got?
I think I'm going to go around 95, 96. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what the Dodgers and Padres both do. But I think those are two 95 plus win teams in that division, which is really bad news for everybody below them in the National League West, you know, Giants, Diamondbacks, and Rockies. But I'll go 96 if I have to pick an official number.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Tony Gwynn Jr. is a radio and TV broadcaster for Padres games. They call him Anthony because when I covered his dad, Tony Sr. would always call him Anthony. And as I've told you many times, I would never want to cross your dad. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Buzz. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. So the Padres, everybody I talk to basically around baseball with other teams, they look at the Dodgers and say that they, in their eyes, the Dodgers are clearly number one. And there seems to be also a consensus that the Padres are arguably the second best team in baseball. And it's been really interesting. I don't know if you agree with me, but in seeing the comments coming out of the Dodgers camp this spring, there feels like an undercurrent of tension. And I don't know if I'm just in the habit of building up rivalries like Red Sox and Yankees, but there definitely feels like there's something there. What about you? What do you think?
No, I think there is. Clearly, the Dodgers, you know, are the defending champions, and they didn't get weaker. You could argue they got stronger, you know, with the guys they got. But so did the Padres. And I think on the Padres side of things, they look at it has a chance to go out and prove it on the field. Clearly, I think on paper, for sure, you know, most people would say the Dodgers and the Padres are a close second, they're right behind them. But again, the game is played on the field. And there's no doubt. There's no doubt there's a little bit of tension, as you mentioned, because I think that starts with the way the teams played each other last year. It was a very close season series. And then you saw the fireworks that happened once they got into the divisional series against each other. So the Dodgers would argue it's not a rivalry, but I think at the end of the day, this is a budding rivalry, and it's good for baseball.
What do you think the games will be like this year? Because I do think it's going to be like back, you know, Red Sox, Yankees back in the day, Varitek, Alex Rodriguez, you know, throwing down. I get the feeling we're going to see some of that stuff this year. because it feels like the Padres are like the little brother coming for the big brother's lunch money.
I think that's the way it's being framed, and I think you're 100% right. When these two teams face off against one another, there is a big brother little brother element to it. But I think the Padres have put themselves in a position to where this is going to be something that's going to be pull and tug, and that's what we saw last year when these two teams faced. The thing that was different last year was, as the Padres went into that divisional series, most of the young guys on that team just hadn't experienced what that was like. And the one thing you're hearing around camp right now from guys like Machado, guys like Haas, is that they no longer have to explain it to these guys. They know what that feeling was like losing in a divisional series. So they'll be hungry to try to get some type of revenge.
What needs to happen for the Padres to make up that gap between them and the Dodgers in your eyes?
I think it really starts with the starting pitching. You know, when you're dealing with Darvish, a Snell, hopefully a healthy Nelson Lamet, it really boils down to that back end of the rotation, right? You got Joe Musgrove, who I think has set himself up to have a breakout year. And then you have, what will Chris Paddock do in his third year? He had a really rough sophomore season compared to that rookie season he put together. And the question is, can he get back to that level of consistency? If he can, this is going to be a dogfight for the division, I believe.
What is Fernando Tatis Jr. capable of in your eyes? What kind of player do you think he's going to wind up being?
I think he's going to wind up being a superstar. Like, when I say superstar, I'm talking like face of the game type guy. And he's well on his way. I just think there is an element to Fernando that is unique from the standpoint of, like, his belief in himself is just next level. Like, he embraces it. A lot of guys don't embrace it the way he does. He knows what's in front of him. He acknowledges what's in front of him, but he's not scared about it at all. And I just think with his talent, he's scratching the surface right now. I think there's so many levels that he can continue to get better at that will get into that level that we're talking about, being the face of the game. I think the ceiling is almost endless with Fernando Tatis Jr. I really do.
So tell me that great competitive arrogance that he has for a great player. Who does that remind you of anybody?
I don't know that it does remind me of anybody, right? Because there's not a, you know, normally when a guy has that kind of confidence, there's like a hard exterior to that person. Where
Barry Bonds,
Fernando,
Barry Bonds,
Barry when he was playing for sure, right? But
yep.
In Fernando's case, it's a much more welcoming thing. Now, he's 21 at this point, 22. Maybe as time goes on, it wears on you a little bit more. But at this present time right now, it just seems like he embraces it. So it doesn't come off as the same type of way of maybe Barry did when he was playing, because he seems to be enjoying every moment that he's out there.
There's something about the Padres I think everyone needs to remember when we talk about, you know, how good they might be this year. It's pretty clear that the Mets and the Padres were the two teams that threw all in on 2021. And, you know, if this was a poker game, they put a lot of chips in the middle, which means that if we get to July and through injury or, you know, lack of performance, some need develops with the Padres or the Mets, I think those are the two teams that we can assume they're going to keep throwing chips into the pile with an effort to win. So yeah, the team that we necessarily see, you know, in the middle of March is not necessarily the team we're going to see on August 1st. What do you think?
1,000%. 1,000%. Because, and I know that because we saw something similar last year with A.J. Preller and the Padres, right? They went in with a team that they knew was going to be really competitive. But they didn't know exactly, they needed to see how it was going to hold up. And as the season went along and the team continued to get better, it was very obvious, okay, they're in a position to go make a move. The Padres will do the same thing this year, I believe, if they're presented with the same situation. They're going to see how this season unfolds. And if they feel like they need to make a move and it's apparent that they do, AJ Preller won't hesitate to make a move, at least in my opinion.
What number pops into your head for victories during the regular season for this team?
98.
Wow. I agree with you. I think they're and I'm just parroting what I'm hearing from folks with other teams. They absolutely love this team, and this is going to be so much fun to watch. And I will be watching and listening to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Buzz. Thanks for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. First up, we have Mick at Squidgy Bow. He writes in, I love your show so much, but please make sure the only Royals talk you talk about are in Kansas. Missouri, my friend. Over here in the UK, we are sick of the whole lot of them. This is a very British tweet, so how do you feel about this one? Can we keep the Royals?
Well, I tried to stay neutral. As you know, I tried to stay neutral on the whole question of the Royals versus Meghan and Harry. I didn't want to get into that. All I wanted to do was win the bet with Tim.
Fair enough. All right, Mick, we'll keep it to the Kansas City Royals on this podcast. You have our word. Next up, we have Amy Chapman at Amy R. Chapman. She writes in, Buster, in my opinion, that was a weak, quote unquote, win over Taylor, who called it when he said Tim likely watched the NBA. Anyway, given the increase in vaccination rates, is there an update on if when reporters will be able to cover the teams and players in person?
Yeah, about the vaccination, Amy. You know, I generally hear some optimism, but let's face it, it's specific from place to place. And I don't know. We'll wait and see. I'm hopeful of covering more games than I did last year when I think, I went to about a third of the games. Anytime there was one on the Eastern Seaboard, I drove. This year, I think it's going to be more, and I'm pretty fired up about that. And I agree with you. It was a weak win for me. I kind of bulldozed, but I would say technically, I do think that if we had judges in the house, that I would have been the winner, Taylor. I say that objectively, but I did try to bulldoze you on. As soon as Tim made any reference that he had some knowledge of what occurred in that interview, I took it as a win.
I don't know, man. We had a third party chime in. Actually, I didn't share this with you, but our programming director here at ESPN, Luis, she said that was a victory for me. So I don't know, man. I'll abide by it. Your pod, your rules. I'll buy you Five Guys or whatever. But the people are talking.
Well, you know what? Let's throw it to the people. You know, we need to hear responses.
Okay, everyone.
And keep in mind that I got my butt waxed last year. When it came to the uniform and logo quiz, Todd Radoms. And so I if you want to feel sorry for me on this particular bet, go ahead.
Drumming up the sympathy vote. That's low, Buster. We'll move on to Andrew Campbell at Real Camp Drew. He writes in, hey, Buster, over the weekend, Yadier Molina absolutely taught a lesson to a young Astros prospect trying to pull a fast one over the old veteran on the base paths. Even at age 38, does Yadi still have a legitimate claim as best defensive catcher in Major League Baseball?
No, I don't think so. But that was a really cool moment. Did you get to see that at all, Taylor? Did you see the video of that?
Yes, I did. Very cool.
Was awesome.
Love to watch.
Jose Siri gets on first base, and Molina absolutely beckons him. Go ahead, run. Go ahead. And then he guns him down. It was a great moment.
Good stuff. Good stuff, everybody. Thanks for writing in. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, to Sarah, to Anthony, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.